the grasping of the self. And in accordance with the Sarvakas and Pratika Buddhas, they accept attachment and craving as the main cause of bondage. And by leading a life in harmony with the four qualities of a superior being, they put an end to attachment and craving. So it is in this way they identify the craving as the main cause for samsara. Of course, even though the craving also takes becomes a main cause for obtaining the psychophysical aggregate, but the main cause of craving is also self-grasping. So therefore, in the case of the Sarvaka and Pratika Buddhas, also they realize the meaning of selflessness, and it is by developing this wisdom, realizing emptiness, that they use this as a counterforce to eliminate the self-grasping. In order to develop such a wisdom, realizing emptiness, that is a harmonious development of karma abiding in the special insight, it is important to achieve one-pointed meditation based on observance of ethical discipline. So therefore Tsongkhapa here also says that in the case of the Sarvakas and Pratika Buddhas, after realizing the meaning of selflessness, they seek the wisdom realizing selflessness, and assisted and supported by ethical discipline and meditative stabilization. They meditate on wisdom realizing emptiness, and through that way they are able to put an end to all types of afflictive emotions. And so they also engage in the practice of the 37 limbs to enlightenment, like the practice of four abandonments and so forth. And it is through this way that they achieve meditative stabilization, and gradually the branches of superior path and so forth. They have these beings have not realized the selflessness of the person in the sense of realization of lack of inherent existence. They have simply realized the selflessness in the sense of non-existence of a person as is designated by non-Buddhist schools of thought. They have not realized the meaning of illusion in the sense that they have not realized the lack of inherent existence of the person, because they tend to see the person as having inherent existence. So what they have realized is the lack of a self as is posited by non-Buddhist schools of thought. Certain non-Buddhist schools of thought say that the person has substantially self-supporting existence, and this such kind of realization, this is the meaning of realization of selflessness as is expounded by some of the Sotantikas, and also some of the Kashmiri Vaibhishikas, and likewise some of the Chittamatrins and Madhyamikas. So in one of the Tsongkhapa's text, he clarifies this meaning more clearly by saying that when it speaks about here, when we speak about the Sarvakas and Patikas, Buddhas realizing selflessness, this is interpreted by the Sotan Tikas and the Kashmiri Vaibhishikas and some of the Chittamatrins and Madhyamikas as realization of a leg of a person that has that is self-supporting and substantially existent. The grasping and perception of a person as permanent, solitary, and independent is a result of philosophical knowledge, philosophical study. So such kind of understanding of leg of such a self will not help destroy the grasping of the innate grasping of the self. And a similar viewpoint is also found in Tsongkhapa's text called Lekhi Nyingbo, Essence of Elegant Teachings. And with regard to how one perceives the person as self-supporting, there are two ways of seeing it. One way of seeing the person as self-supporting is to see the person and the psychophysical aggregate as having same characteristics. And another way of seeing the person as self-supporting is to see the person and the psychophysical aggregate as having different characteristics. So by merely realizing the selflessness of person in the sense of having no permanent existence, independent existence and so forth will not harm the grasping and seeing of a person as self-supporting and substantially existent based on innate grasping. And Chandrakirti refers this viewpoint by saying that if the realization of selflessness here is only the realization of selflessness, if the realization of the selflessness is only the realization of non-existence of a self as is expounded by non-Buddhist schools of thought, and not the realization of lack of inherent existence of the person, then in that case, the person definitely has not reduced the grasping of the person as having true existence. And in the absence of which, it is not possible to say that such a person has realized the selflessness of the person. And so long as there is grasping of the person as having true existence, till that long the grasping of the person will not cease. And just as realization of lack of inherent existence of a phenomena like psychophysical aggregate is seen as the realization of the selflessness of the phenomena. Similarly, when we talk about realization of lack of inherent existence of the person, then we should regard that as the realization of the meaning of selflessness of the person. So therefore, so long as there is grasping of the grasping of the psychophysical aggregate as having true existence, still that long there will be the grasping of the person, and till that long it will not be possible to put an end to afflictive emotions. And therefore, without removing afflictive emotions, however long the Sarvakas and Pratyeka Buddhas make effort, they will not be liberated from the cycle of existence, from the samsara. So long as there is the existence of the grasping of the psychophysical aggregate as having true existence, then one will also see the person as having true existence. And so long as one sees the person as having true existence, in other words, when you have such grasping of the I or the self as having true existence, till that long it is not possible to put an end to a complete end to all afflictive emotions. So in that case you have to accept that however hard the Sarvakas and Pratyeka Buddhas work, it will not be possible for all them to achieve liberation. In that case, you have to say that you have to accept that there is no Sarvaka Arhats and the Pratyeka Buddha Arhats. And if you say that, then you commit an infraction, in the sense that it is very clearly explained that there are Sarvaka Arhats and Pratyeka Arhats. Now, with regard to afflictive emotion, there is a type of afflictive emotion which is due to grasping of the person and seeing the person as having substantial existence and self-supporting existence. And this type of afflictive emotion, by removing such type of afflictive emotion, one actualizes an arahathood in accordance with the Abhidharma explanation. But from the parlant and the point of view of the Madhyamikas, they are not actual arahats. But at the same time, this does not mean to say that in general there are no Sarvakas and Pratyeka Buddhas that have achieved the state of arahathood. So in the case of achieving liberation, both in the case of the Sarvakas and Pratyeka Buddhas, it is necessary to remove not only the grasping of the self from the based on philosophical studies, but one should be able to remove the grasping of a self, which is inborn and innate. And this is what explained here in the Madhyamik Avatara by Chandrakirti, where he also says, by seeing the selflessness through the yoga that you are expounding, you will not be able to realize the suchness of the form, because by observing the form, it is possible to develop attachment and so forth. This is so because the root cause of attachment, etc., is the subtle grasping of the self. And since such a person has grasping, subtle grasping of the person, they will not be able to realize the ultimate reality of the form. A person who sees form, etc., as having inherent existence will not be able to realize it is lack of inherent existence. And this is what is explained in the commentary of the Madhyamika Avatara, where it says that when you wrongly and mistakenly perceive the nature of form, etc., then it is not possible for you to realize the selflessness of the person, because you are observing and grasping the entity of the form, which is the cause and the basis of designation of the person. This is also the thought of Nagarjuna, as he says in his precious garland, so long as there is grasping of the psychophysical aggregate, till that long there is grasping of the I, and so long as there is the grasping of the I, till that long there will be action and birth from the actions. So that means when you have the grasping of seeing the psychophysical aggregate as having true existence, and when you have not eliminated the object of apprehension of the true grasping, till that long the person will have inborn grasping of the self. And so long as that person has inborn grasping of the self, then that person will again perform negative actions, which will result into the suffering of birth within the samsara. So this means that when we perceive the person, it is perceived through the psychophysical aggregates. So before perceiving the person, one perceives the psychophysical aggregate, and when the psychophysical aggregate is perceived as having true existence, then based on that one tends to see oneself or the self as having true existence. And when one has that grasping of the person as having true existence, then one performs negative actions, and that in turn projects negative rebirth. In short, if you are someone who has strong belief that the psychophysical aggregate has true existence, then it is not possible for you to realize the selflessness of the person. In the case of someone who has realized the selflessness of the person, then that person will naturally be able to see the psychophysical aggregate as having no inherent existence. Because in terms of lack of inherent existence, it is same with both the person and the psychophysical aggregates. Because the lack of inherent existence is the ultimate nature and reality of all phenomena. The reason that how through true grasping one accumulates negative action and that in turn projects one's life into samsara, Nagarjuna in his fundamental wisdom says that by putting an end to contaminated actions and afflictive emotions, one gets liberated. And negative emotions and negative actions and afflictive emotions arise from conceptions, and conceptions arise from elaborations, and elaborations can put to rest, or elaborations can be eliminated by emptiness or into the state of emptiness. Contaminated actions basically arise from afflictive emotions. Afflictive emotions arise from conceptions. Conceptions here refers to our process of thinking in relation to different objects, seeing some objects as good, some objects as negative, and it is through these kinds of misconceptions that afflictive emotions arise. And these kinds of misconceptions and thoughts arise from the elaboration of seeing things as having true existence. And such kind of elaboration, which is based on grasping of true existence, can be eliminated by emptiness or into the nature of emptiness. The elaborations of grasping of true existence can be eliminated by properly realizing emptiness and by seeing that by seeing the non-existence of the mode of apprehension as is perceived by the true grasping mind. Similarly, in other texts by Nagarjuna called praising the aspect of the non-conceptuality, there also Nagarjuna says that the Buddha's one, the path which is definitely relied upon by the Buddhas, Pratika Buddhas and Sarvakas, is in other words, the soul, the only path which is relied and used by the Buddhas, Pratika Buddhas and Sarvakas is only one, and there is no other path. So the only path that is the path of liberation is the non-conceptual mind that realizes the lack of inherent existence of all phenomena. So this teaching from Nagarjuna is the thought of the Buddha. For example, in the Paramita Sutra, it also says that even those who wants to train in the ground of the Sarvakas should train in the Wisdom Perfection Sutra. Similarly, in the condensed version of Paramita Sutra also, it says those who want to become Tathagatas, Sarvakas, and Pratika Buddhas, and similarly, if you want to become a Dharma king, then one should rely on this practice of forbearance. And without relying on this forbearance, you will not be able to actualize the state of Buddhahood. So, forbearance here refers to the wisdom realizing emptiness. So without relying on the realization of emptiness, it is not possible to become a Dharma king, a Pratika Buddha, a Sarvaka, or Tathagata. Discrimination is like a mirage. Conditioned existence like a plantain tree, and consciousness is like an illusion. Thus the relative of the sun, that means Buddha, thus the Buddha has taught. And similarly, the same meaning is explained in Nagarjuna's fundamental wisdom, where Nagarjuna says that in the instruction of Katayana, he refutes both the two extremes, the extremes of existence and the extreme of non-existence, and thus taught the subtle meaning of selflessness. So therefore, even in it is not the case that the selflessness of phenomena is not taught in the Hinayana vehicles. However, in the Sarvakapitakas, they say that through the view of the 16 aspects of the Four Noble Truth, one will be able to reach up to the state of the Arhathood. So there are such, there are many such similar statements. And similarly in the Mahayana also, by realization of the lack of inherent existence of the phenomena, and by the realization of impermanence, one can travel through the spiritual path. So you find two such teachings. For example, in the Mahayana sutras, we find two explanations of process of traveling from ordinary state to the state of enlightenment, based on the viewpoint of the Mahayana school and viewpoint of the Madhyamika. However, those sutras, those teachings, Aryadeva very clearly says that those sutras which explains the viewpoint of the Madhyamikas cannot be interpreted, and this is confirmed by citing quotations and seeking the support of the teaching of Nagarjuna's texts and teachings. And whereas those other sutras which explain the meaning of the mind-only school of thought, these are accepted as interpretative level of teaching, so therefore their ultimate thought should be understood, or should be understood through interpretation. So similarly, just as we find such kind of two levels of teaching, the interpretative teaching and ultimate teaching in the case of the Chitamatra viewpoint and Madhyamika viewpoint, so similarly when we find quotations like the possibilities of achieving Arhathood through the 16 aspects of the path and so forth, this should also be interpreted. In other words, just as you find quotations from the Sarvakapitakas saying that the realization of the subtle selflessness is a must, similarly you will also find certain quotations from the Sarvakapitakas which speaks about the Sarvakas and Pratyeka Buddhas not having realized emptiness or selflessness. And similarly, you also find statements by saying that unless you realize such selflessness, it is not possible to transcend suffering, to eliminate samsari existence. And they also say that it is these grasping of true existence which is the cause for bondage within the samsara. So when you find such seemingly contradictory statements, it is important to see them in their proper context and interpret them in accordance with the context, and not to see them as contradictory. So it is really important to find out about the ultimate thought, and then one should be able to interpret them in their right context. Sanje Shendo Megde Right in the beginning, develop altruistic motivation, thinking that I will achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. And then we'll start reading from the text. Yesterday, we were talking about the three yanas, the Sarvaka yana, Vartika Buddha yana, and Bodhisattva yana, and we were also studying about the need to realize emptiness, the need to meditate on emptiness by even the Sarvakas and Vartika Buddhas. Now a question is asked here by saying that if paths like meditation on impermanence does not help us get liberated from samsara, then what is the purpose of giving such teachings on the 16 aspects of the Four Noble Truth, like impermanence and so forth? This is answered by citing a quotation from Nagarjuna's text called 60 Verses of Logic, where it says that this teaching on birth this teaching on the path of birth and destruction are taught with specific purposes. That means by knowing birth, we are able to know the death and destruction, and by knowing destruction, we know impermanence. And by realizing impermanence, we are able to realize the sublime Dharma teaching. Sublime Dharma teaching here has different meaning. There is another quotation which says, whoever is able to see the dependent origination is able to see Dharma, and whoever is able to see Dharma is able to see the Tathagata. That means whoever is able to see the infallibility of interdependent origination in the sense of cause-effect relationship, one is able to know that there is infallible relation between cause-effect relationship. So that is the meaning of knowing the Dharma in the sense of knowing the cause-effect relationship. So that is a kind of worldly right view. And by seeing the cause-effect relationship, you engage in accumulating positive deeds and engage in removing negative deeds. And by engaging the practice of giving and so forth, you are able to achieve enlightenment. So that's the meaning of whoever is able to see the Dharma is able to see see the Tathagata. That means one is able to actualize Rupakaya. The other meaning is whoever sees dependent origination means dependent origination here refers not only to cause-effect relationship but to a more subtle form, which is the interdependent relationship in the sense that everything is being designated. And once you know that everything is designated, you are able to know that everything is devoid of inherent existence. And by understanding such a subtle meaning of dependent origination, you are able to know the transcendental reality, the subtle emptiness. And it is in this way that you are able to actualize the Dharmakaya. So that is also here when we say that the sublime Dharma will also be realized, refers primarily to realization of emptiness. And one who abandons and eliminates birth and death through understanding of dependent origination will be able to cross the ocean of samsara. So that means when we develop strong attachment towards conditioned phenomena, then we get stuck within the samsara. And as an antidote to this, when we meditate on impermanence and the path of suffering and so forth, one is able to cross the ocean of samsara. And therefore it is through the reason of understanding of birth and death that one is able to realize the dharma of interdependent origination, and through that realization one is able to get liberated from samsara. So the actual liberating path is the realization of the selflessness of the person and selflessness of the phenomena, whereas other paths like realization of impermanence and so forth are only paths that purifies as a method to purify one's mental continuum, so that based on that we are able to develop realization of the selflessness of person and the phenomena. So similarly, other masters also accept such a viewpoint, that is that they also accept the realization of selflessness of the person and the phenomena as the liberating path, and other aspects of the path like realization of impermanence as a means to purify one's mind so that one is able to realize emptiness. Now, when we talk about realization of emptiness and selflessness within the 16 aspects of the Four Noble Truths, then we are simply talking about realizing us, realizing a leg of self as is designated and imputed by non-Buddhist philosophical systems. So such kind of realization of emptiness is not a proper antidote or counterforce for removing the innate grasping of the person and seeing that person as having inherent existence. So from that it becomes clear that all the parts of the 16 aspects like impermanence and so forth are not the actual liberating part, but they are all same in being, just the purifying part that purifies one's mental continuum. And therefore, So the realization of lack of existence of a self as is imputed by non-Buddhist philosophical schools of thought, and not only that, the realization of lack of existence of a self which is permanent, partless and so forth, which is accepted within the Buddhist schools of thought as a result of philosophical imputations, such realizations of lack of existence of the self is not the actual realization of emptiness. Because even after realizing such emptiness, still one could have innate grasping of the self, seeing that as having inherent existence. Now, with regard to this, we can reflect ourselves, relating it to our experience. For example, when we say the I or the person do not have inherent existence, we are not relating it to whether it is outside the psychophysical aggregate or within the psychophysical aggregate. We are simply saying that the I doesn't have inherent existence. So when we say that, what kind of idea we get? However, to our ordinary mind, whenever an object, whether external or internal object, appears to us, they appear to us as if they have inherent independent existence. That is the way we perceive. And it is based on such misconception we tend to think that there is now on the other hand, if we say that there is no separate I which is the controller of the psychophysical aggregate, then what kind of idea you get? Of course, conventionally or nominally speaking, we tend to think that within the psychophysical aggregate there is an I. And apart from that, there is no separate I that controls the psychophysical aggregate. So when you make such a conclusion, so that in that way we are able to refute the existence of a self-supporting independent I which is separate from the psychophysical aggregate and which is the controller of the psychophysical aggregate. Even though we do not accept such an I which is separate from the psychophysical aggregate, independently separate from the psychophysical aggregate, when we accept that there is an I existing within the psychophysical aggregate, and when we see that there is an and when we refute the existence of an I outside the psychophysical aggregate, then it seems we are able to refute and eliminate only the misconception of thinking that there is an I or person outside the psychophysical aggregate. And still we might think that there is an I dependent on the psychophysical aggregate and which exists inherently. So you can clearly see that the grasping of inherent existence of the I cannot be refuted by such an understanding, as is said here in the Tsongkhapa's text called Essence of Elegant Teachings. So therefore, when we refute the I and person, saying that the I and the person doesn't have inherent existence or from its own side, then that kind of understanding has the capacity to refute not only the existence of I outside the psychophysical aggregate, but also an I existing within the psychophysical aggregate and has and having inherent existence. So it is in this way Tsongkhapa is here also refuting the viewpoint of some of the masters who say that out of the 16 aspects of the path of emptiness and selflessness is a liberating path. And the rest of the 16 aspects of the path are simply for purifying one's mind. Tsongkhapa refutes this by saying that when we talk about emptiness and selflessness within the 16 aspects of the path, we are talking about non-existence of a self, which is simply imputed by non-Buddhist philosophical school of thought, and such kind of realization of emptiness will not be counterforce for removing the grasping of the person and seeing that as having inherent existence. Of course, this is a complicated topic. We need a lot of reflection, but there is one way of seeing the